As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. It's lovely to be here. I'm Norwich City correspondent for The Athletic, and I am standing in for Joe Devine this week, which is very exciting. I cannot wait. I am joined by the lovely John McKenzie. Hello, John.
Hello.
They're hearing it in real life. It's wonderful. And also, Seb Stafford-Bloor is here. Hello, Seb.
Hello, Michael.
You're here in person.
I am actually in London, yes.
And not in Germany. That's
not
exciting.
Germany. No, I am actually in the UK.
We've had a long debate about whether I should ask you about Gates.
I say ask.
You
ask
say this. Yes.
This came down to whether you felt it in the moment, and like it feels like because you're asking now, you're trying to hedge your bets a little bit.
You've done exactly. A really good job of like distancing yourself.
Yeah. 100%.
You've kind of created a little bit of a like a win-win situation for yourself. Yeah. Here.
That's good. Okay, good work.
No, I just hope they were okay when you left home. right, this week we are going to talk about Bayern Munich. Are they struggling? International football, last international break before the World Cup. So that must be exciting, right? We are also going to look forward to the Manchester and North London derbies, two massive derbies in the space of days. Napoli are flying high, so we're going to talk about Napoli. Apparently there's no Norwich City on this list, but maybe we'll rectify it. No, we're not going to talk about Norwich. That's fine. I tell you where you could read about Norwich, providing someone does some work on them, which I should probably be doing now. You can read about them on The Athletic, along with lots of other football clubs across England and away from England a little bit as well. You can also, if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can subscribe with a 30-day free trial. You just need to go to theathletic.com/TIFO. That is theathletic.com/TIFO, where you could read, Seb, your very touching piece on the Riviera Derby, which I might have pronounced right.
No, well, that's very, very kind. If you're in the mood for reading stuff, I also have a recommendation, and that is to read our new book, which is going to be released on the 17th of November. It's being published by Penguin, and you can pre-order it now at all good sort of book places, Amazon, Waterstones, Penguin website. Very, very good, we think. If nothing else, it's worth it just for Alistair Fine's wonderful artwork. It's absolutely beautiful, and please do go and buy it. Not you, I'm saying please you go and buy it, but I'm meaning the audience.
I mean, I'm assuming it was my payment for doing this.
Well, like if it turns out that you haven't, you know, pre-ordered or bought a copy in, say, sort of 3 months' time, then we'll have a rethink about whether you're already welcoming our little TIFO football space at the office.
Well, let's move on quickly. But yes, indeed, go buy that book, which is good because I didn't even have that plug on here.
It's also called How to Watch Football. I should have mentioned that in the first bit.
How to Watch. What was the title again? Sorry, Seb.
How to Watch Football.
How to Watch Football.
Yeah.
Which I think we all need. So that is wonderful. Right. At this point, I've written jingly music. So I think there is some jingly music that goes in about here. My favourite jingly music. And we're going to start today by talking about Bayern Munich. They are fifth in the Bundesliga. It doesn't matter how early it is in the season. That's very low for a team that has always won the Bundesliga, I think. What is up with that, Seb? Are they not as good anymore?
They're not as good anymore. There's also, you'd think that Bayern not being good is a good thing, and that people in Germany enjoy that. And to an extent they do, but then the realization is that when they start to slip, you see the news cycle being dominated by Bayern Munich and by an increasingly sort of silly set of reports. Now we've reached the stage where Bayern Munich are kind of the perma discussion on German Sky now, in German press, and it's become increasingly granular. So we got to the point last week where there was an issue with Julian Nagelsmann's touchline attire, sort of various Bayern Munich legends and sort of mumblings about how, you know, does he dress properly? I know he's wearing Hugo Boss and Adidas and those club sponsors, but is he, you know, is he really dressing properly?
It's actually in terms of brands then, I mean...
Yeah. And also, Nagelsmann didn't help himself because when they most recently lost to Augsburg 1-0 in the last Bundesliga match day, inevitably the Lewandowski question came up because actually the best chance...
I've got that one down here, actually.
Yeah, well, he reacted very badly to it because a plucky journalist in the press conference said, you know, would you, I'm paraphrasing, but would you have won that game if Lewandowski was still here? And I had sympathy with him because he said, well, he's not, is he? What's the point? What's the point in the question? He doesn't play here anymore. And so it's got a bit tricky. It got worse because the day after they lost to Augsburg, Bayern Munich made their traditional visit to the beginning of the Oktoberfest festival. I should just gone
which
very German.
Which is set in October, actually.
I should have just Oktoberfestivaled. That would have been the German thing to do. Anyway, obviously they were in their traditional attire and with the beer glasses and everything, and they all looked very, very glum. So you had this, there's a couple of excellent photographs of Nagelsmann looking not particularly happy to be there. Oliver Kahn looking a little bit, Oliver Kahn always looks the same, doesn't he, really, in most photographs. The point is that it's not quite working at the moment, and there's a lot of different discussions going on about why that is, including Lewandowski. John and I have talked a little bit about underlying numbers, which is quite an interesting part of this conversation. But one other thing to say is that there's been a bit of criticism of Nagelsmann's management style, and led by Steffen Effenberg, which is, it's a little bit of an irony. Steffen Effenberg, never the most, I mean, quite a controversial guy, very, very good player, former Bayern Munich captain, but wasn't always the most collegiate of professionals when he was playing. But he said basically, and I'm paraphrasing again, that these Bayern Munich players, they don't need to be taught, you know, new passing routines. They don't need to be taught new automatisms. They don't need an ideologue trying to reteach them the game. What they need is someone that's good with the kind of the interpersonal aspects of management.
No coaching.
Exactly that.
Brilliant.
It's kind of what he said. My German isn't good enough to tell whether he was being entirely serious or whether he was just being provocative, but it's left a mark because that's been sort of repeated elsewhere and people have been talking about it. And now Nagelsmann's kind of having to, or will, when the Bundesliga restarts, is going to have to defend his sort of interpersonal relations with players. And it's a difficult situation.
Well, there's that. And also, what's he going to be wearing? He going to, you know, really mix it up? The expected numbers are good. John, I've looked at them because yes. Someone put them in the doc, and so that helped.
That was me. I mean, it's tough to talk about, like, is a team doing better or worse than they were the season before over a really small sample size? So I'll say that as a caveat, but the numbers look better to me than they did last season when Robert Lewandowski was there. So this season, Bayern Munich, obviously fifth in the league, but if you look at their expected goal difference, which is the difference between how much expected goal value they're generating versus how much expected goal value they're conceding, they're at plus 11.4, which is very healthy. So over seven games, you're creating more than an expected goal a game over your opponents on average. Last season, it was much lower than that. It was down at 8.1. I mean, it's much lower, but it's three expected goals within seven games. It's a lot. So it's really hard to judge like where Bayern are at, really. And obviously, a lot of people will just look at the results table and base their opinions on whether or not a team are doing well or not on that. But I think in this instance, Bayern have been good and have been unlucky to end up in fifth place. And actually, if you look at an expected points model, so I looked at the one at Understat because it's one that's freely available. There are others available. And Bayern should be top of the league by about 3 points according to this expected points model. And expected points model is obviously taking the underlying numbers and then predicting how many points you would be likely to win from those games if you played it 10,000 times. So obviously, if their underlying numbers are good, then they're obviously going to be more likely to have picked up more points. So obviously, there's a correlation there, but it does suggest that actually Bayern are not worthy of
it. They have been really unlucky, John. There hasn't been, Michael, like an awful performance, one where you think this needs tearing down and we just need to rebuild this. It's just not the case. It's just like bad moments against Stuttgart, isolated moments like from perhaps, De Ligt's mistake against Stuttgart came under scrutiny because he's cost the club so much money and because he's Matthias de Ligt and because it's a talking point. If you take a couple of these moments out, you're left with, I don't know, maybe a slight it's like, you know, growing into new clothes, isn't it? Because you've completely reconfigured your attack and there's chemistry which needs building with some of these players, and Sadio Mane's goalless streak has come under observation too. But still, a very good rebound performance against Barcelona. The only question I have is the slightly strange situation, which I don't quite understand, going on between Marcel Sabitzer and Leon Goretzka. Not between the two people, just in the preference for Sabitzer in the midfield alongside Joshua Kimmich, which I just don't agree with. I think Goretzka is a footballer from a different world to Sabitzer. I think Sabitzer's a good player, but does he bring what Goretzka does? I don't know, unless I'm missing something.
It's worth saying, I think that Nagelsmann has changed completely the style of play that Bayern have been playing. So it's funny because when Nagelsmann was at Leipzig, he was playing a style of football that you would expect Bayern to be playing. And now he's gone to Bayern and now he's playing a style of football that you'd expect Leipzig to play. So he's moved to that more gegenpressing approach, the direct attacking, not necessarily having like a lone striker who is a focal point, but sort of trying to move quickly through the middle with your team.
So is that directly because Lewandowski's not there, do you think?
I think partly. And I think, you know, Sabitzer is a player who's played for Leipzig. And so it sort of makes sense to bring in a player who knows that play
trust,
style,
isn't
right?
It? Yeah.
It does raise a lot of interesting questions insofar as, okay, if you look at the underlying numbers, they're generating more expected goals now and they're conceding fewer expected goals than they were previously. In fact, the only game where they put up less expected goal numbers than their opponent was against Barca, which they won in that game. So if you look at the number, it must be tough for Nagelsmann, because you sit down and you say, let's look at the number, like the underlying numbers suggest that we made the right decision here. We are playing in a way that is generating more chances and we're conceding fewer and in terms of value as well. And yet, in terms of the league positioning, it just looks like things aren't going well, right?
So, but if they are creating all these chances and they have this XG, and then it's obviously the obvious question, but then they don't have the striker who scored loads of goals because he went. And then there's a narrative in Liverpool at the moment. I don't know if it's stretched beyond Liverpool, but Sadio Mane, you know, is he struggling? But is he struggling because Munich is struggling? So maybe it's a question that gets asked a lot, but are they missing Robert Lewandowski?
Well, I don't know whether it's quite the right question. Yes, in one sense, but also the way they're trying to score goals is different. If you think about that, it's an attacking group now, isn't it? So Müller is obviously still there. And while still a very good player, I would say that Müller, his level is a little bit down. I think he would acknowledge that publicly. I might have even done so. But you had Musiala in there, Gnabry is in there, and Leroy Sané is in there. What Bayern try and do now is their chance creation seems to, obviously, like all attacks, it depends on getting players into the right positions and creating the right chances. But what you've taken away is a player who, I think I've said it before, but one of the best one-touch finishers and, you know, close-range finishers European football's ever seen. And you're replacing it with this kind of hive of attacking activity, which loads of really good players. Musiala is absolutely a diamond of a player. I can't express how good a player is and how exciting it is to watch him. What a shame it is that England won't, you know, be able to pick him over the next decade. But you need chemistry, you need understandings, and you don't just get those within 7 Bundesliga games and a Champions League tie. Added to which, like, the thing with Lewandowski wanted to leave. You could argue that Bayern's handling of his contractual situation and handling of him as a person, you can argue about whether that was right or wrong. That's fine. But at the same time, what are you going to do? Because Bayern are not going to spend 100 million euros on a player. Like, their transfer record isn't anywhere near that. It's, I think, still 80 million for Hernandez. Well, I'm not sure if De Ligt actually costs more, but you get my point. So your only option was to restyle an attack around an entirely different sort of player. And you just have to be patient. And there'll be times when I've watched them, I've honestly thought, God, they're going to be better. I remember with that Leipzig game in the German Super Cup, for about an hour, I just thought, Bundesliga over. This is terrifying. They're better. Obviously, that was premature. But at the same time, it's a measure of the fact that at the moment, they're kind of finding their gear, dropping out of it. And it's just going to take some time. So check in with them, I think, in January, February, and see where they are then. Like, it's a nice anecdote that they're the fifth in the Bundesliga. I don't think anybody is under any illusions that there is still an awful lot of power in Bayern Munich.
11 in a row is still on then. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, they have done really well in the Champions League as well, in fairness. You know, you look at it and go, well, yeah, four games without a win in the Bundesliga, which I've written here. Is it too easy for them? You know, if you were going to prioritise what you were going to do, you would probably go, well, Champions League, let's go through that tough group and away we go.
Yeah, and I think that's the question worth asking. I mean, Bayern, as you've said, have won 10 Bundesligas in a row. Like, if they don't
What's
win it,
the point?
Is it the end of the world? I think that the focus is going to be Champions League now, and it is for the elite clubs. And so I just would love to know the conversations they're having at Bayern Munich Towers right now, where they're sitting down and they're like, okay, we're doing well in the Champions League. If you look at the underlying numbers, we're set well in the Bundesliga as well. How much of this tearing up of the copybook and changing the tactical approach, are they going to then look at that and say, we are now in a better position than we were in previous seasons to win in the Champions League? And okay, yes, there's a wobble in the Bundesliga, but who cares? If this puts us in a better position to actually win the Champions League, then it'll be worth it, which is a weird position to be in, I guess.
It's quite interesting to hear some of the commentary from inside the camp. Like, so Thomas Müller...
Inside Bayern Munich Tower, which I'm still visualising. Yeah.
It's like a fortress, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So Thomas Müller spoke about what he described as sloppiness amongst his teammates, which is, I wouldn't say out of character, because he has that in his locker, but I think most people sort of associate him with a sort of more jovial personality, and like, he likes to joke with the media and stuff. There's another interesting moment when, after that Barcelona game, which actually, strangely, I thought was one of Bayern's worst performances of the season, strange enough, because I thought they were battered.
The first half.
They got pressed into oblivion by Barcelona, and they were very, very fortunate to be level. Anyway, after that game, I think it was Oliver Kahn said something along the lines of, yeah, no one's getting complacent about this. The truth lies in the league table. So it's a funny one. And then he also, following that game, Nagelsmann rotated his team, and not to any great effect. And Kahn defended him and said, well, we've just got players that want to play, and the coach did what he needed to do and get... So it's quite a complicated situation. It's quite interesting. I know that people have a go at the Bundesliga about plot lines and predictability and all that kind of stuff, but it is a really interesting moment when a team has actually dominated for so long, and then a kind of period of reinvention is forced upon them, both managerially and in terms of personnel. Like, what happens next is fascinating, actually, because it also occurs within this glaring media spotlight. If you're Bayern Munich, you don't get to go and reinvent yourself on the sly, do you? Because in England, media focus is spread across the four Bayern Munichs that we have here. In Germany, there's one, and it's total. And so everything that happens is covered in exhaustive detail. And so that's really what's happening. And it's interesting. I know not everybody agrees with me, but it's an interesting moment in their history.
The four Bayern Munichs, interesting.
The three Bayern Munichs.
Oh, three.
Three. Like, I mean, I suppose...
Who are we not including in that?
Well, so both Manchester clubs, Chelsea and... Oh, God, I've got to be careful. Yeah, Liverpool. I'm hesitant because they're not all the same type of club, are they? But in terms of what they represent and their status within the game, I think that's a kind of a fair grouping.
Ooh. Nailed his colours.
Go to the comments.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
What I say.
Look forward to reading those ones. Bayern Munich have got Leverkusen and Dortmund coming up. So a couple of 5-0 wins. Sort that out. That'd be great. I did want to spare a word for Union Berlin, which I'm pretty sure I haven't pronounced anywhere near how I should have done, because they didn't lose to Bayern and they are top. And we can give them a little bit of love here. This is a real genuine opportunity, unless you don't think they deserve it, and that's fine.
They do deserve it.
Are you sure?
I got to go to Union about 10 days ago, and it's an amazing story. Like, let me recommend Kit Holden's wonderful book about them, about their not just their promotion to Bundesliga, but their history. It's absolutely fascinating. It's a wonderful piece of work. But I think what interests me about them is that, yes, they're top of the Bundesliga, but they're one of the few clubs in Europe who are using an old school front two. Geraldo Becker is the speed merchant. He's a great finisher, but his movement is excellent, his work around. Jordan Pefok, who is a US men's national team international. I spoke to some American fans about him, and he's sort of on the cusp, but there's a bit of an argument apparently. Might be wrong, but some people think he should be starting, some don't. I couldn't be more impressed.
He's been included in the squad, is that?
Yeah, I have no idea. Like,
is Josh Sargent keeping him out of the US? Squad.
That's your Norwich bit.
Josh Sargent.
Thanks.
Josh Sargent is playing well this season.
He's doing well. He's playing well in the Championship and looking awkward. I feel like we've already spoken too much about Josh Sargent. Carry on.
So,
Seb, please.
I think if you get the chance to watch them, it's like watching like a typical English team from the early 90s. You got your big man, you got little man. Becker's a great player. Like, he will go for a lot of money at some point, no doubt. But PFOG's really underrated. Like, he, if you go and see the goal he scored against Wolfsburg, the diving header at the near post, one of those sort of eyebrows headers where he glances it across the goalkeeper, as a sort of a target man in not necessarily the old-fashioned sense, but like a more up-to-date, like, you know, because he's a pretty good goal scorer too. It just works. And that ground as well is a very, very special place. And do go and read Kit's book, because it will fill in some of the context and describe some of the things about their journey which make Union's story special.
I think Geraldo Becker is one of the funnest names to
great
say
name.
This season.
Great
Becker.
Name.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it will fit Geraldo in and Becker. Fit in at Bayern.
Super quick. Super
I like the expression eyebrow headers.
It's the glance, you know, like you've got the header coming across. So that goal, it's Becker's assist, really nice cross, just like really well sort of shaped cross. Jordan's made that run to the near post and it's got across his marker and he has to just direct it across the goalkeper.
That was the winner as well.
Eyebrows.
Fairly late winner.
It was it was goal one and a 2-0 win, but it was brilliant. Right in front of the home ultras as well. So it was
hugely important eyebrows.
He's massive.
In that case.
Sat in
Maybe
front
that
of,
helps.
He,
traction.
He is very, very not the eyebrow. The eyebrows are normal size.
The like
the, the size is
predator
is,
eyebrows. Yeah. Put a bit of extra spin on there. Oh. Anyway. That's a lot of Bundesliga. Well done, everyone. Thanks.
Yeah, we said half an hour. We've made like almost reached it.
We so sustained that well, and yeah, I tried to keep control of it.
We're
it's
on
fine.
We're uncontrollable. look at us.
The thing is that when Joe needs to control us, he's quite blunt. He just goes, "I'm bored now. We're going to move on."
Yeah, I did notice that.
And
it's nice not having Joe on, to be honest. You know, he's quite antagonistic towards me. People have been noticing this in the comments, you know, is that I've had to fight back a little bit. It's quite nice just sitting here feeling comfortable.
Okay,
and just being like, yeah,
good.
Let's have a chat with my pals.
That's it. It's like, you know when like a sort of a dragon lives above a village and all the villagers are too afraid to kind of go outside? The dragon's gone. And now we're all out in the street having a little chat, and you know,
it's opened up a space for creativity. And
have we
collaboration?
Is this the sort of talk everyone's enjoying listening to? I don't know.
Help me!
I've still got the words "Don't do a Joe Devine impression" ringing in my mind, so I'm not.
If
not
you
doing
were
that.
To do a Joe Devine impression, though, which one would you go to? You don't necessarily have to do it, but
because when we were sorting this out, Joe Devine said that it might be difficult doing this podcast, in the presence, because he could have been here of a
looming
literal podcast gods, and they were his words. I've got the message.
I heard him definitely saying that.
Yeah.
Whether then maybe he is, I don't know. Let's not talk about that either. Let's maybe we should. Let's talk about international football, because I was very excited. I was like, last international break before the World Cup. This is crucial. This is important. Even if people who don't like international breaks will like this international break. Now it's sort of halfway through and kind of on the side of everyone else, really. At least Germany are faring better than Bayern, are they? Maybe not, because they lost for the first time under Hansi Flick.
Yeah, they lost at home to Hungary, which is an experience.
Hungary are good, though.
Yeah.
They've won that group.
I feel like I'm in a little bit of an awkward space here, because England and Germany are playing this evening. We're recording on Monday and releasing on a Tuesday. This so maybe true. We'll defer this one, but neither look great. So I'm not sure quite what is at stake.
I have it. Can we write them off for the World Cup? England, Germany, too much to do. All over the place. Yep. No form.
It's all about South America for me.
Argentina look excellent.
Oh, wow, we're going straight. Okay, we can do that. We can do that. I've written here, because the real favourites, Brazil beat Ghana and Argentina beat Honduras. They are unbeaten for 34 games.
It's Argentina.
Yes, which is a long time. I don't know what it is in terms of how many international games
you
play.
It's like a decade of football, isn't it?
A decade of football. I feel like, no, they wouldn't have missed any tournaments.
If they'd have won every game and been unbeaten, they would have won the World Cup.
Several times.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And obviously Lionel Messi scored twice as well. So obviously Argentina are going to win the World Cup and Messi will win the...
Hey, Messi in that playmaker role is a problem. You know, for a long time, like, his responsibility was goal scoring in ridiculous volume, as well as, you know, playmaking output too. Now he's kind of been released from that burden at PSG, and that's translating a little bit at international level. And I know he scored a couple of goals over the weekend or over the international break, but they're super dangerous. And yeah, not bad. Like, I think Lionel Scaloni only really got hired because he was cheap. So it's not a bad situation to end up in. all things considered.
Of course, the big question is always, is Lisandro Martinez too short for World Cup competition?
Yes.
That's the one that is going to determine who wins, I think.
Well, we can talk about him in a bit to work out if he's too short for something else first and then get there. I mean, obviously, Messi, criminally underrated, so maybe winning the World Cup would you'd maybe get a bit of extra traction. Maybe his last one? Last big tournament?
Hipster's favourite, Lionel Messi. Yeah.
Tick that box. So that works. We did a bit of that as well. Just going back to the Nations League, if I can just regress, which some would agree is the right term. Germany are in the group, same group as England, but struggling. But England have actually been relegated already. Mm. And I did admire the kind of narrative that if you're relegated from your group in the Nations League, that is really bad. You know, like club football, if you're relegated, it really hurts. And I'm like, I don't know if it really does. It doesn't matter. You just play some different countries next time who might not be quite as good, but doesn't really matter. But then maybe that's all club football is. I don't know. Does it really hurt getting relegated from the Nations League?
Feels like you're living something out live on the podcast now. Like it's a sort of, you're exercising relegation demons.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I hadn't thought about
it. Have you
like
come to terms with that?
No. Yo-yoing.
As a Norwich fan, do you have a
Why
like...
Why are we talking about Norwich?
Well, no, because I'm interested because it's such a, like, the existence. Yes. It seems like you're in a state like of great happiness or great doom. Do you ever have a neutral setting?
Well, never too high and never too low.
That's it.
The summer would be, yeah. But then they do transfer windows. I'm supposed to know what's going on. And I don't care. But I do care. But yeah, it's more everyone else. Everyone else is so happy to speak to you all the time when everything's going so well. And also claim the credit because everything's going so well. We did it all. And then everything goes wrong and no one wants to talk to you. And everyone's like, well, it wasn't anything to do with anything we did. We just had some injuries. So yeah,
group therapy session.
Anyway, relegation in the Nations League isn't that bad, then, is it? England don't care. You got asked
all the broadcast revenue they're going to lose.
You're just asking Declan Rice, it's really bad, isn't it, being relegated? He's like, I don't care. Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that if you win your Nations League group and then the playoffs, you get automatic entry to a competition?
Yeah, I think
so. Surely
right.
It's beneficial to get relegated from a higher group to a lower group.
Oh, just like relegation to the Championship.
Yeah. I don't think anyone fully understands the Nations League yet. Nations League.
I love the idea of it, though. I love the concept.
I don't hate it. Like, I really like some of the fixtures it throws up. It's not the England ones because England play games against teams that beat them and then we have what's going on at the moment and it's a little bit tedious, but there's some great games. I mean, it does create watchable football, which was the whole point, rather than kind of death by friendly.
Yes.
Is it Kevin De Bruyne though who said, I'm bored of playing against Wales? Because it does feel as though they have Wales in every group. And I think Scotland went through a phase of playing Israel in every group as well. And I wonder whether or not like stratifying leagues according to level means that you just end up with the same teams playing each other over and over again. So
one for the Nations League legacy committee to figure out. Italy beat England and they're looking good for the World Cup. No, really weird that. But that's probably all we can say on that. Go on, Seb.
It just, the response, it feels a little bit laboured. I don't really understand. Okay, when you've got a couple of important players who are out of form in your international squad and you've got a World Cup on the horizon, a European Championship, I understand making exceptions. You know, like you've got an out of form Messi. Yeah, we'll probably take him just in case and the hand luggage. But England have got like 7 players like that. I'm not sure I kind of land on either side of the Southgate fence. I'm not sort of hugely for or hugely against. I don't want him sacked or fired into the sun, or I don't think he should be given contract for life. But it seems to me like if you pick a lot of players you aren't playing and those players aren't top of their class position-wise, you're going to get criticised for it. And everywhere you look in this England team, there are players who either aren't playing or who are out of form or whose teams are badly out of form. So even someone like Declan Rice, not a bad season. West Ham are having a bad season. So he's part of that. Luke Shaw, can't even remember when he last played. Harry Maguire, same thing. It's just a weird position to put yourself into. Like Calvin Phillips was selected. I quite like him as a player, but how many minutes has he played this year?
14 competitive minutes.
There isn't an argument for trust in that situation. Like if a player hasn't played for what would have been months ahead of that World Cup, you can't do it. It's very strange. It's like you're knowing everything that Gareth Southgate does about the English media and the way that English media jumps on any kind of negative performance. You're kind of asking for it, like ahead of a World Cup. It's very strange.
There you go, Gareth. You are asking for it. The US are a bit worried because they lost to Japan. And they thought they were going to be really good. And now they've lost a friendly to Japan. And the World Cup is in tatters. Not the trophy, just the preparations.
Yeah. It's funny, we were talking before we came on air about the fact that we apply sort of domestic criteria about football onto the international game. And yeah, that obviously the US sort of hype the World Cup every time, and it's a matter of when, not if, that they're going to have a good World Cup competition, right? But it does feel as though they overhype the team going into it, and then something happens and then they panic. But they all seem to scrape through the qualifying against teams that I don't think are necessarily like the top echelon of international football. And then they've come up against Japan, who, you know, traditionally been quite a good side, regardless of how you think they currently are. And yeah, they've lost. And so the big question is, like, is it portent disaster in the World Cup?
In Josh Sargent, they trust.
Hey, intensity in that Japan game was concerning for like the US. Like, caliber of performance, that's up to the individual fan to judge. But like, the gulf in application between those two sides was worrying. Hard to understand. I haven't read an explanation for it.
This is kind of my point. Like, how do you read into a random game 3 months before the tournament?
It's hard.
It's not 3 months.
Week. They'll have a week together before the tournament, just iron out a few things, run around a bit more.
I think this is one of the confusing things about international football, because if you look back at like that England game at Molineux and they lost to Hungary, obviously England shouldn't be losing that game by that margin or playing that badly. But at the same time, end of the domestic season, like, what's the right context as a, what I have to imagine is a fleet of jets roars overhead.
yeah, we should probably mention there are some like roadworks, building
like
works.
Like an Apache might helicopter. I don't know. Like
it's Chinook. It's coming through the roof.
Yeah, so that's interesting. If you're enjoying that, be thankful it's only for an hour or however long you've chosen to listen. Last international break mention, Erling Haaland scored.
Yes.
Obviously. Is that exciting?
Shocker.
It was for Norway, though. So.
And they lost, but he scored. He scores in every game he plays in.
So everyone else around him let him down.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yep. So good luck to Norway with whatever happens next. I've got written here break. So let's have a little break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is Ian Irving, host of Talk of the Devils, the podcast dedicated to Manchester United from The Athletic. After what's felt like an eternity without Premier League football, it's back with a bang for United this weekend, with the Manchester Derby taking top billing. Join myself, Andy Mitten, Laurie Whitwell and Carl Anker every week, but particularly this week as we build up to what's probably the toughest test yet of United's newfound optimism under Erik ten Hag. Just search for Talk of the Devils wherever you get your podcasts and make sure to click follow and subscribe for access to all our episodes.
Welcome back. We can talk about some football forthwith, which is very exciting because the Premier League is back this weekend. And some belters, both derbies coming up. There is the Manchester Derby, which is on the Sunday at 2 p.m. at Old Trafford.
The Sunday.
Well, it will be the Super Sunday, maybe, okay. Or some such.
Sundays are super now, though, according to Sky.
Well, that's lazy. 2 p.m. obviously GMT, British Summit. BST. No, BST. Thank you, John. Yeah. So that's then, and then the North London Derby will have already happened by then because that's on Saturday at 12:30 BST. That's at the Emirates. So I've merged those two topics horrifically. So let's talk about the Manchester Derby first because that happens afterwards. Obviously, very exciting. Old Trafford. I did work out Man United have only won 2 of the last 11 derbies against Man City at Old Trafford. So, I mean, that's not very good. But what's the exciting bit about this one, John?
Yeah, I think for me, obviously everyone's a little bit higher on Manchester United than they were after the first couple of games.
High.
But it's probably the case that Manchester United have gone from arguably underperforming in those two games, maybe underperforming is poor, but being bad in those two games, to maybe overperforming a little bit in the run afterwards. So, for example, the game against Arsenal, I think, could have gone either way. I think both teams play pretty well. And so, yeah, you've also got Manchester City side, who everyone touts as winning the league by whatever, August or whatever it is, but they've not been quite so good.
October.
Yes.
World Cup. Yes.
Yeah. But they've obviously not been performing to the level that people have expected from them. So I expect there's a lot of people out there who probably think that Manchester United are in with a decent chance here. But I think it'll be a good bellwether to see just quite the level that they're at. I think that in terms of the tactics, this is a sort of... Manchester United, I think, will be okay against the top four sides because they can do what they did against Arsenal, which is defend well, but always have the opportunity to hit them on the break. And, you know, Manchester City are always the... I'm sure I've said Manchester United and Manchester City the wrong way.
Oh, it's fine.
Just, you know what I mean?
The Manchester clubs.
Yeah, Manchester City are always open on the break, and Manchester United probably play their best football on the break. So could we see something from that? Maybe.
Don't United fans not like them playing on the break? I thought that was one of
the... Yeah. I mean, well, they seemed pretty happy when they beat Arsenal playing on the break, so maybe it's...
Yeah, why not? Yeah. That was the last time they played in the Premier League, Seb, against Arsenal on September the 4th.
That feels absolutely ridiculous, but you're right.
Crazy. So we don't know how good they are now because it was so long ago. Where's the momentum?
It's not international football.
I think Liverpool are actually... By the time Liverpool play again, it'll have been a month since they last played a Premier League game. I think that's right.
Wow.
Don't shout at me if I'm wrong about that. But
and then they'll just complain about fixture congestion, won't they?
Maybe,
there we go.
Maybe.
I feel like we need to balance this rather than just talking about United. So City, they're good. Erling Haaland, he must be on like 43 goals.
Something like that, monster boy. Yeah, Erling Haaland is Erling Haaland. I think we've covered him enough, and I mean, know what he is.
I don't think we've covered him enough.
Let's keep covering him. About him. More covers.
I think I've got my Erling Haaland.
There it is.
There he is.
There it is. Lovely.
Erling.
Yeah. Go real life.
For a prescient t-shirt, that. Lovely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't paid as much attention to Man City as John and JJ have on the RL channel, but I feel like I'm watching two different teams. I'm watching something really interesting take shape when they have the ball, and a team maybe who are slightly looser without it. I don't know if that's fair or if I'm watching it wrong. Tell me, John.
Yeah, I don't know. The funny thing about Pep Guardiola is that he's a manager who just stresses about defending transitions, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those elite teams' managers are because they control possession and they've sort of solved possession in that sense, but they are always open for that attack on the break. So this will be a really interesting game from that point of view. I think City are good this season. I think City are good every season, and I think they're always the favourites to win.
I think they might be quite a good team.
They could win the league.
I think they definitely. They, you know, they had a chance at the start of the season.
Mm.
They've still got a chance now.
You know what is interesting about them is that when Erling Haaland signed, I had a picture in my mind of the type of goal he would score a lot of. And as it turns out, not so much, really. Like, the types of runs that... It feels a little bit like they've adapted a bit more around him than I was expecting. I thought he would be... You know, earlier we talked about kind of Lewandowski's scoring positions at Bayern. I kind of imagined that to be him, and that you would see a sort of a slightly narrower focus to him, like more of a purely penalty box player. Like a Borussia Dortmund, he wasn't a penalty box player, really. He scored goals in the penalty box, but he contributed elsewhere too. And I guess I'm surprised at kind of the breadth of his attacking contribution and the kind of the way it looks with him in that side. That's interesting. I love watching him. I know it's not a particularly original observation, but I love watching a player who surprises me and who does new stuff and who reveals new strengths and new areas of supremacy, like against defenders. It's fascinating, and he's just ridiculous as a footballer.
Lisandro Martinez, John, could he be the centre back to stop Haaland
with his name with a Norwegian pronunciation?
With his shortness, I didn't get the joke out.
No one can defend.
No, someone must be able to.
Okay, so the defender who I've seen do the best job against Erling Haaland is Nico Schlotterbeck last season for Freiburg. Yeah. And he's obviously moved on to...
It's a little bit of Freiburg bias on your part.
Bit of Freiburg bias, that's a fair point. Yeah. I did watch all of their games last season, so I got to see him playing a lot. And yet he was the player who was brought on to mark Haaland when Dortmund were playing against Man City, and then Erling Haaland scores that ridiculous goal at the back post to, I think, put them ahead. Was it the one that won it for them?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's the mantra, right? You can be good at marking Erling Haaland, but that doesn't mean that you're always going to stop him from scoring. Now, I think a lot of people have mentioned that when Ajax played against Dortmund in the Champions League last season, that Lisandro Martinez did a good job of marking.
Did he do a number?
But I've also heard people say that's actually not true, and the goals that were scored, he was nowhere to be seen. I've not watched the game back recently, so I wouldn't like to stake my life on it. But I think that Erling Haaland, when you're defending him, you have to be super positionally aware. If you're trying to go up against him in a physical 1v1, you're never going to do it, especially if you're Lisandro Martinez. But I think that you can, if you can read the game well, if you can get into situations where you can stop him from getting into situations where he scores. So if you read, yeah, if you, basically if you're good at the positional side of defending, then you have a chance. But even then, it's still inshallah.
There you go, Lissandra. That's your to framework, whatever.
Pray to the gods.
Coaching. So we've decided that there's a game in Manchester. That's good. There's also a game in North London where I feel like Arsenal Spurs is a game I've kind of been looking forward to since the start of the season because they're both in the same space. I do mean geographically, but football wise too, both, Seb.
Yeah, I feel like form wise they're in slightly different spaces. I think Arsenal have been playing, that Man United game aside, although they played well at Old Trafford, they've been playing ever so well and are probably the form team in the league. Spurs winning, but not with any kind of flourish or flair. Like, it's been fairly pragmatic, and actually there's been a little bit of stat padding.
What's this? Stat padding.
Stat padding.
That could have got very awkward with some strange words.
Please don't stat pat me.
No, I don't. Please.
slowly moving away. Training technique. We're going to, yes, carry on.
There's been a bit of stat padding.
With all those stats.
Which has masked a few issues, like fluency issues and a little bit of chance creation issues. So I don't know. I still don't really know what Tottenham are. I feel like I've got a good sense for what Arsenal are going to be. And I think that we've seen a fair reflection of them so far. And I think Gabriel Jesus has added actually far more than I thought he would in terms of what he's not only been able to provide on a singular basis, but also what he's enabled other players in that team to do. Like, I think they just look more dangerous en masse. And Arsenal now, like, you see the way they attack. And when they have kind of territorial dominance, there's a threat to them, which I think last season could look a little bit sterile at times. And just like possession for possession's sake, like that old Wenger illness that people used to complain about with them. Whereas now, yeah, they're lethal. Not looking forward to this at all. I think it's one of those games where, like, you look at, if you're trying to find an area of Tottenham advantage, it's probably in their size. They're a little bit of a roguish team. There's some nasty characters there. Like, I feel like if nothing else at all this season, they've shown that they can get results and they can get results.
Well, that's quite handy. And also, it is. Like, you know, Spurs fans must be like, yeah, look at this, Spursy, not anymore. Look at this.
Yeah, but but this is the thing. Like, if you look at this game historically, I think a lot of Tottenham fans would say that the one thing they want from their team is show up. Like, show that you're actually in the game rather than just rolled over last year in this game. If you take the last 20 at the Emirates, quite a few of them fall into that category. They turn up, they wait for something to happen, and they respond to it late in the game, and that's just not going to be good enough. Also, another big factor, I think previous years, you could say, right, go there and shut the game down 45 minutes and wait for the crowd to turn on that team. That's not going to happen this year because it's completely different. The atmosphere in which Arsenal are playing is a huge part of what's making them what they are at the moment. And so you can't just, instead of waiting for the kind of the anxiety to leak out of the stands, you're just going to experience a kind of a swell of momentum against you. And I think that's pretty dangerous. Also, apparently Hugh Lloris might miss this game for Spurs, which is, when Fraser Forster is your backup goalkeeper, probably not a good thing. Not a bad goalkeeper, but
Norwich
don't know
City
about
lone
that.
Legend, Fraser Forster. There we go. Lloris has a small injury to right thigh.
Nice. Very comprehensive.
Told me. Not much more. Arsenal already have bragging rights because the women beat Tottenham 4-0 on Saturday in front of 47,000 plus people. So they're on for a double.
Wasn't it about 51,000 in the end or something like that?
Maybe they just broke in.
It was amazing. I saw some pictures of it. It's absolutely amazing.
The Liverpool-Everton game in the WSL was really well attended as well.
Brilliant.
Nice.
That's really good. Nice. Capitalising on what happened. Yeah, exactly. That's really good. It's really,
love
really
that.
Good.
Okay, I think that does.
Oh, anything, I'm going to get to
do you
talk
want,
about
do, do you want to? Do you want to talk
well, I was going to say, this is going to be an aesthetic battle, I think, because Arsenal and Spurs are very close in terms of points, right? It's like 1 or 2 points in it. And everyone is saying Arsenal playing incredibly nice football, playing incredibly dangerous football. And Spurs, as you've said, everyone's like, this is turgid.
Bit stodgy.
We're grinding things out and winning. And that's the big battle, isn't it? People are like, well, you know, that's the sign of a good side if they're grinding out results. But I think this one will really come down to, you know, it's going to be, whichever way it goes, people will say, we've said that this was the case and this wasn't. But I feel as though it's on a knife edge. I think it could go either way. It could be very similar to the Manchester United game, which is both teams playing well in the way that they play and it coming down one way or the other, and then people responding to it based on the result and saying, well, you know, Arsenal can't beat the big sides. But if Arsenal beat Spurs, then will the narrative swing back to, you know, Arsenal really going to be title contenders this season, etc. So I think it's going to be a fun game. It's going to be, I think, like a really finely balanced game with two very different styles of play.
You know what's interesting? Like Spurs, when they haven't been playing well and when people got edgy around them about when they cede possession or territory, like their saving grace has been they're not giving up shots in good areas. Like they give up chances, but low percentage chances. Now, like to me, Arsenal are really well equipped to create good chances with some of the players in that forward line. There's some artistry there. There's players who can scheme in really dangerous ways, but also forwards. Like, I think one of the things that's impressed me about Jesus is his movement in the box, like his ability to receive the ball in the box. And that, to me, that feels like that's pretty well aligned with the Spurs' vulnerability at the moment. So yeah, dangerous times.
Hurrah! Will you be doing one of those videos where we say we were right in post-event?
I will not, because I'm going on annual leave at the end of this week. Goodness, so I shall not be thinking about football.
Oh, that's Joe's
10
problem.
10 days.
Not mine.
Who signed that off?
Well, I hope someone does that video. That'd be great.
That'd be a JJ Bull double, I think, over the weekend.
I think you've all missed JJ. He's on his way. Right, let's have a... game in London, that will happen. It's exciting. Game in Manchester. What a weekend.
You don't know how to finish the podcast, do you?
Well, we've got loads to go.
You're in this
perpetual
loop.
Ages. Okay, this is just a bit before the break.
Okay.
Which is going to be now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Well, that was the break. Hope you all enjoyed the lovely break. Well, we're going to stop off now in Serie A, where I think Napoli look fun, but John, you think Serie A looks fun all across the board.
I think so, yeah.
That's nice.
Last season, it was the battle of the Milan teams for the title, and I feel as though a few other teams have thrown themselves into the mix, namely in the form of, as you've said, Napoli. Roma have got good underlying numbers under Jose Mourinho. They've also got a few other fun teams insofar as Udinese, like have just really come out the blocks really well. Atalanta are up there, although they did get a bit of a lucky result against Roma, so I'm not sure how sustainable that'll be. But Juventus are not performing well, and Inter are struggling a little bit as well. So it's just meant that there's like a really nice compression at the top of Serie A at the moment.
I mean, Napoli weren't bad last year.
No, but they said they felt a little bit maybe inconsistent, which I think is probably true of a lot of the teams in that group that I've just mentioned. But that's probably what makes for competitive balance, right? Like lack of consistency across the top teams.
Failure of others.
We're so used to Man City, right? And or Liverpool being in that headspace where they just win everything. Yeah. I mean, there's been league titles in the Premier League decided like really, really early on, and then no one's dropped points.
Are you trying to say the Premier League's not competitive, John?
No, I think it is competitive, but I think it's more interesting when teams have that frailty whereby you don't actually know they're going to win. Man City aren't going to win all of their games apart from when there's a massive upset. Whereas I think in this league, you're not expecting every team to win every game in the same way.
Love it. Giacomo Raspadori, I cannot roll my R's, scored a lovely goal against England. So he looks like a nice player floating around in Napoli, he says. And then deep breath, obviously lots of talk about Kvicha Kvaratskhelia. Is that right?
You've done pretty good.
That is a pretty good effort.
It's a whole train journey to Norwich. I've been practicing that. And lots of talk about him being awesome. Just call him Kvara, he says, so I will now.
I think what's interesting about him is that back in the day...
You went with him then.
Yeah.
Interesting about him?
Him.
That footballer. Dribbly boy. That's footballer. What you have to call him.
JJ Bull tribute. Lovely. Before the internet, you'd find out about a transfer just by seeing a player on the pitch, right? Like, or they'd turn up on CFAX and be like, oh, your team has signed this guy from this place. And you'd never have seen him because unless he played in... Serie A, where there had been, you know, there was coverage on Channel 4 or the occasional, you know, whatever.
Same with the head coach sometimes, or manager.
Absolutely, absolutely. Player? Well, Arsene Wenger is a good example of that. No one, you know, remembered anything that happened at Monaco when he was just a guy from Japan. He has this guy. What a wonderful footballer. Every time I watch him, I said it earlier a little bit about Erling Haaland, that you discover something new about him every time you watch him play it. And the same is true because I'd never heard his name until about 6 months ago, and he turns up and he plays like he's been in a major European league for 5 years, and he plays this incredible expression, and there's something slightly, and I mean this in a good way, something slightly amateurish about his style. There's none of that sort of big club academy refinement and gloss that you sometimes get, which can occasionally make players look identical to one another. Like you see the same technical traits again and again and again. This guy, not at all. And he's fascinating. I can't remember another example. I'm very happy to be corrected. I can't think of another person who's had the same kind of impact, having come from almost nowhere, come directly from Georgian football, if I'm right.
I think he came from Russia, maybe.
He came from, it's a Dynamo Batumi.
Is that in Georgia now?
Maybe. He was in Russia for a little while.
Maybe. So your direct line, you don't have a soft landing somewhere. You don't go, say, to a mid-level French club and then you graduate up to the top of Italian football, or you don't go to a German club and then take us up. You just go directly in there and you capture the continent's imagination immediately. And that is that Napoli team is just fun. It's loaded with fun players. Osman is I think, like, one day it's going to be a sort of £150 million player eventually, or euros would probably be the more valuable currency at the moment, unfortunately.
Fredo's.
Yes.
That's a lot of Fredo's.
Yeah.
I can't even work out off the top of my head.
One for next week, John.
Just fun. Like, also, like, just take advantage of the opportunity to watch someone like this at the moment. Don't worry about what he's going to be, or how he's going to cost, or where he's going to go, or, like, is he connected to this? Just watch him play football. It's just fun.
And I guess, like, for me, it probably was the game against Liverpool. We're just watching them tear them apart in the Champions League. It's like, oh, wow, this is another level. And for all the talk about Liverpool being a bit all over the place, just what Napoli were doing was like, I would watch this every week.
Yeah, I think he's a really raw player, I think.
That's the right word. That's the word I was searching for, yeah.
And he's the sort of player who is able to cause problems by just sheer physicality almost, rather than, like, I think, any sort of real technical ability on the dribble. But, yeah, super fun player. And, yeah, he was at Rubin Kazan for 3 seasons, went back to Georgia briefly.
There you go, John. And then, so we were both right.
We were both right.
Everyone was
right. Do we have a correct pronunciation? Because I want to get the name right when I say it.
Well, I did look a lot into this, and but John, you can say it effortlessly.
My cheat sheet is, if you say creature, like you're English, creature, like a creature. Of the all creatures of our God and King.
Got you. The word creature. Yes,
and
creature.
Then you say, it's weird because both names start with K.
Right.
But the first one is sort of pronounced creature.
Creature.
Yeah, if you want to do that, you can do that.
It's a lovely sound.
The second one sounds more like a G to me, so it's almost like creature, Gvaratskhelia. That's how I've heard it
said. Creature, Gvaratskhelia.
I'm not trying again now. You've done it so effortlessly.
So, you know, there's no easy way of saying it. If you pronounced it, you have pronounced it wrong.
In his own words, just call me Kvara. That's what he said.
Nice.
So just do that, because the man himself said...
Watch him.
So there we go. Okay, we've got a little bit of time for EFL news, because Watford have sacked Rob Edwards. That's it. Sacked Rob Edwards.
Is that a big...
Fortunately, big Norwich news? Aren't playing them next, which is normally the case.
Big news in the Championship.
Well, you deliberately go and get someone from Forest Green who's been there for years and give him his big opportunity.
And then you give him 6 weeks.
This is the time you're going to spend time. This is the time it's going to be different. And then you give him until September. And you bring in Slaven Bilic. Nothing's changed. So that's exciting.
I did read a few people on my Twitter timeline, Watford fans, talking about how kind of disenfranchised they feel from the club at the moment, which is never good. So
people say these things.
They do.
Some at Norwich say those things.
What's the TLDR of the Championship right now? Like, who's everyone saying is going to go up? And
well, Sheffield United look good. It's all about the teams with parachute payments, and the Championship standard below the parachute payments is.
Have Norwich got infinite parachute payments now? Do they just on forever and ever and ever?
They've been promoted twice in the last 4 years, but the first time they didn't have parachute payments when they went up. But the gap between the Championship and the Premier League is vast, and no one's really...
So we can include like Norwich as a de facto Premier League side then in terms of the money, would you say?
Well, they don't have any owners with any money.
Well, that's true.
So no.
You're saying the gap between the Premier League, but with the parachute payments thrown in, that presumably adds another layer. So there's like almost like a stepping stone to the Premier League.
Yeah, it's the middle bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people are happy and some people aren't. But again, we're talking too much about Norwich. Stop getting me in trouble, because I think you might get me in trouble. But there we go. That's the EFL Bulletin brought to you by me.
You look like a very jaded man every time we talk about Norwich. It's weird.
Is it?
Yeah, it's
the
weird.
Energy is so much out.
You just look like you've gone somewhere quite dark.
Seven games unbeaten, second in the Championship. I am loving life. so much so that I should probably get back to it. We should probably end the podcast. So I think we're done. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you. It's been great having you on, and may it long continue.
You're very kind. Thank you, John. Take that. Seb.
Hi, Michael.
Thanks so much for very, coming very all welcome. The way from Germany just for me to host
just
a pod.
This. I'm literally going to go back right now.
Good. Well, safe trip. I'll probably get back to Norwich after you still. Thank you very much to producer Craig, who's over there. I think he could do a hand wave, but it won't be in any shot. He's waving.
You're welcome.
It's the best beard I've ever seen. Thank you very much to Sean Thorne, who is that a real name?
It is, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
He is an audio editor, brackets freelance, which just seems like an important detail.
Yeah, Sean is editing my podcast, which is coming out this week, actually.
Nice one, Sean.
8 episodes of a special podcast episode coming out on the TIFO RSS feed. So if people are listening to this podcast, then it will drop into their RSS feed. If they're watching it on YouTube, some of them will be on YouTube. But if you want to get all 8, sign up to the
What
RSS
will that podcast
feed.
Series involve, John?
It is me talking to people within the industry, mainly about tactics, but some not about tactics, some about the World Cup as well. But yeah, long form Talking Heads podcasts that go a little bit more
exciting.
Absolutely lovely, and well done for shoehorning the plug-in, although it did kind of distract from Sean Thorne's thanks for editing, but I'm sure he's done a great job.
This is all down to Sean Thorne.
Is Sean leaving this in? This is the problem.
Yeah, who knows?
Well, please leave this in, Sean Thorne. There we go. We'll be back.
Sean Thorne it in. Shoehorn to Sean.
I feel like you're dragging it out now. We'll be back next week, or Joe will be. I won't be. I might be back in October if this has gone well. If I'm not back at the end of October, you'll know it hasn't. That's fine. It's still been lovely. So thank you, everyone. Goodbye.